The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Sorry, excuse me, I cleared my throat with the mic open by mistake. Good morning, you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show, 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 22nd of August. How are you getting on? Big news last night out of the county. Jimmy's winning matches. Jim McGuinness is back. How happy are you about that? Jim McGuinness has taken over for a minimum of a 3-year period. There's an option for a 4th year. Jimmy's winning matches. We're going to be talking about that a little later on. Also, we've got Community Garda information coming up for you. That and so much more besides. We want you involved in the conversation. Maybe you want to react to that news. That Jim McGuinness is returning as the Donegal senior football team manager, and he's got a cracking backroom team as well, hasn't he? 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. An early reminder for you that you can watch the programme and most of our guests by going onto our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, where you can watch on your phone, tablet, laptop, smart TV, which has your YouTube app on it, if it's a smart TV, and also your Fire Stick, which has the YouTube app preloaded. Facebook as well is there for you. Highland Radio, News and Sport, Highland Hub. And lots of content on there, by the way. It's not just our show, and I'd highly recommend that you go back on YouTube or Facebook, whichever you prefer, and watch Monday Night Sessions last night. Jimmy and Paul coming live from the Blake's Bar on Letterkenny's Main Street for a special live show with some great talent right across a number of genres, from rock to traditional to whatever it might be. So you can always catch up on programmes as well and watch them back. As I say, that's a special video presentation on YouTube of Monday Night Sessions last night. So it's not just this programme that you can see, of course, as you probably already know. Let's go to the newspapers. The Donegal Democrat, their lead today is that Congressman Brendan Boyle, the son of a Glencolum Kilman, has not ruled out contesting a US presidential election in the future. Neither have I. The 46-year-old was re-elected to represent Pennsylvania's second congressional district last November. He leads the Democrats in the House on the House Budget Committee and was first elected to Congress in 2014. Shocking figures coming out of the Irish Independent this morning. More than 4,300 young people are on waiting lists for mental health services, with children in Cork and Kerry the worst hit. According to the HSE, there are 4,361 people on waiting lists for child and adolescent mental health services. That's CAMHS in Ireland. Just figure that, 4,300 children, young people. And then, of course, that their families and those that are worried about them and hoping that they get seen and get any help or treatment they might need. It comes after the Inspector of Mental Health Services last month told parents that she couldn't provide an assurance to them that their children have access to a safe, effective and evidence-based mental health service. What an admission. Dr. Susan Finnerty's final report on the provision of CAMHS and discrepancies between the wait times and the experience of children suffering from mental illness depended on where they were in the country. New figures provided by the HSE to the Irish Independent found that the Cork and Kerry Community Healthcare Organisation still had the longest CAMHS waiting lists in the country, with 976 young people currently awaiting for help. But the situation is not fantastic either in the CHO1 area, of which we're a part. That's Donegal, Monaghan, Sligo, Leitrim and Cavan. 367 child and adolescents are waiting access to CAMHS services in our area. 367. I mean, if that is your lived experience and you want to help us shine a light on that shocking statistic, and it's not it is a statistic, of course, but there are people behind these statistics, please feel free to get in touch with us. 086 60 25000. I started listening to a podcast last evening as it relates to the trial of Lucy Letby. She's a former nurse on a neonatal unit in Chester Hospital. She's received a whole life prison term for each of 7 murders and 6 attempted murders of babies in the unit for which she was convicted this month. And when I say I started it, I couldn't continue with it. It was just unbelievable what this individual was responsible for what she did to beautiful, premature, mostly vulnerable, all vulnerable babies. Babies that their parents were believing that they were in the best of care. In most cases, the babies had really bright futures. I think there was only one that was actually born at full term. These were mostly, there was one little baby was only was born 10 weeks early. It was only 2 pounds and it had just had its first feed when she did what she did. And I'm trying to be sensitive with the language because it is so emotive. And also there could be different people listening at this time of the morning and with people at school. And we are going to talk about this a little later on, but I'll give you a fair warning, okay? And I'll give you a sort of an estimate of how long we might talk about it if you wanted to tune out, because depending on your circumstances, it could be hurtful to you. But it's hurtful to all of us. As I say, I just simply couldn't listen on to the podcast. It was just too horrific what these little vulnerable individuals were put through, these little babies. But the sentencing judge in Manchester Crown Court said Letby had a deep malevolence bordering on sadism, and there was no mitigating that could be considered for her crimes, which included killing babies by injecting them with air and poisoning others with insulin or through overfeeding. Letby, who maintained her innocence throughout her 10-month trial, refused to appear in court yesterday to hear her sentences or, most importantly, to face victims' families who branded her a coward. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said the government was examining a legal change to force criminals to appear for sentencing after Letby refused to leave her holding cell. And as I say, the details are contained in all of the papers, and it would be a better person than me really to be able to listen and go through all of that, because as I say, it is just so horrific. More developments in this Ironman story, where very sadly two participants passed away. And as I say, yesterday, I didn't want to say too much because I didn't know the details. More details are coming out this morning. Triathlon Ireland has been left reeling after the deaths of two men at an Ironman event, as it did not sanction the race to go ahead due to adverse weather conditions. A full investigation is due to get underway after Ivan Chittenden, who's 64, and Brendan Wall, 45, died in Cork on Sunday. Last night, Triathlon Ireland, the sports governing body, said they confirmed to race organisers it was not possible for them to sanction the race. They stated for the Ironman Cork event, in line with normal practice, Triathlon Ireland technical officials attended before the start of the race to review conditions and carry out a water safety assessment. Due to adverse conditions on the day, Triathlon Ireland technical officials confirmed to the race organisers that it was not possible to sanction the race. They didn't believe it was safe. So clearly now that widens out the questions in that why did it go ahead if they didn't get that sort of sanctioning, and also, you know, who ultimately made that decision? Those are the types of questions that will be asked now, and it seems those at this point would be justified. 70 jail sentences, €775,000 in fines, 13,000 prosecutions. What do you think that's all relating to? It's lockdown offences, and it's what's been dished out to people as a result of lockdown offences, and people are still being jailed for them and fined. A special investigation, as it's described by this paper, found there have been more than 13,000 prosecutions under now outdated COVID laws. There have been fines totalling €775,000 and more than 70 jail sentences overall. One man fined 2,000 in 2021 for travelling home to Ireland from abroad to check on his elderly mother is challenging his case. Two people were jailed for breaching restrictions in the first 4 months of this year, 3 years on from the introduction of emergency laws to curb the spread of the virus. So far in 2023, 1,700 such cases breaches have come before the courts. The revelations come as Taoiseach Leo Varadkar warned of a new wave of COVID with a 90% rise this summer. But my focus there was just on the punishment being dished out. The offers an offer has flooded in for Ryan Tubridy. GB News, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the channel or if you've watched it, but apparently Ryan Tubridy has been approached by UK TV channel GB News after being sent packing by RTE. Bosses made contact with the X Late Late Show last Friday to discuss a role with the station. GB News editorial director Michael Booker told the Irish Sun, Ryan Tubridy's a fantastic broadcaster, a people's presenter with great wit and empathy. GB News got in touch with Tubbs, who's 50, the day after RTE boss Kevin Backhurst told the presenter he wouldn't be returning to his Radio 1 show. Well, a lot of people inside and outside the building says, well, you're very lazy. Who came up with the name for your show, the 9 till noon show? You know, it used to be the 10 to 1 show, so we moved it from 9 till noon to 9 till 12. So it's the 9 till noon show. And the amount of abuse I got for it, like, you know, call it something else, blah, 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 blah. Well, RTE have copied me now because they've called their new show in the morning the 9 o'clock show. Okay, so I feel vindicated now because there's an awful lot of very clever people down there and they've just went with the time of the show starts as well. So everyone can apologise for my naming of the 9 till noon show. Right, did you watch the Rose of Tralee last night? Catherine Thomas said, I can't believe we're actually here as she made her Rose of Tralee debut last night. I didn't watch an awful lot of it. I watched a bit of it. I watched the London Rose, who is from Donegal, and I interviewed her in 2017. She was in playing her flute, and she's fantastic at it as well. That's about as much as I saw. But what I did see of Catherine Thomas, I liked. I thought she was confident and direct and all that kind of stuff. Well, the first 18 women took to the stage to chat with Catherine and Dahi O'Shea, and they'll speak to the rest later today before a winner is crowned tonight. Catherine joked she was even more Kerry than Dahi after he questioned her credentials for presenting the contest. Did you watch it? Did you enjoy it? 08660 25000. 08660 25000. Like, I'm reluctant to get into the conversation. Well, I'm not reluctant, sorry. We can talk about whatever we like, but, you know, a lot of people talking about, oh, it's old-fashioned, it shouldn't be on the telly. But, I mean, there's lots of stuff on the telly. There's lots of negative crap on the telly at the moment as well. And there's lots of things taking place that are really dangerous, as we've just read there. This is a competition where what I see is, you know, really strong, powerful, intelligent women with great careers and great talents want to be part of it. And for those who want to watch it, it's on the TV. For those who don't want to watch it, my word, Dire Straits once wrote about 57 channels and nothing on. There's thousands of channels now. You can watch something else. But I don't know. I mean, my views have changed on these things. I'm not going to lie to you. I think there's a place for them. If people want to partake in them, it's up to them. It's a platform for them to do so. But if you want to have that conversation too, there are no holes barred. 086 60 25000. WhatsApps and texts to that number, 086 60 25000, or give us a call to 07491 25000. For the next 10 minutes, we're going to be talking about this awful case from Britain, the sentencing yesterday of baby killer Lucy Letby. She stayed in her cell yesterday as she was told she would die behind bars. The neonatal nurse who murdered 7 babies and tried to kill 6 others at the Countess of Chester Hospital was given whole life terms. Trina O'Connor is a criminologist and host of Real Life's Untold podcast and joins us on the programme now. Thank you so much for your time this morning. I do appreciate it, Trina.
No problem. Good morning.
I mean, this is just the most horrendous of cases, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite shocking. I think whenever we see cases like this, medical cases, people are very shocked because we put so much trust and faith in medical people to look after us at the most vulnerable time. And I think too with Lucy, I mean, a lot of people have described Lucy as nice, kind, friendly, and even how she looks aesthetically. She looks friendly. She looks quite innocent. So I think people are quite shocked because we often have an image in our mind of what kind of person is an evil person, what kind of person is a killer. And Lucy really doesn't fit a lot of them boxes. And even from a psychopathic point of view, she really doesn't fit a lot of them boxes because she hadn't shown any traits of psychopathic behaviour. I don't actually think she's clinically psychopathic. I think that she definitely has traits, but she hasn't shown anything that would flag an issue. And that went on for so long. And some of the language that she used as well, like she would have assured parents, trust me, I'm a nurse. Even knowing what she was going to do, it's quite sadistic, her behaviour.
Yeah, in relation to the BBC evidence that was given. She was based in a different part of the hospital, but found herself there and was encroaching on the parents as they were grieving and saying hello to their baby. Now, I'm not presuming as to what that was about, but it's almost as if she wanted to witness the... it's almost as if she wanted to witness the fruits of her crime.
Yeah, there is evidence that suggests that she was highly kind of excited by the whole kind of death process. And also some of the evidence that we've read, she, even in her own words, said that she was fearful that she'd never get married, fearful that she'd never have a family. So some of her behaviours may have been driven through jealousy and the power to take that away from others. And one of her first kills was just after she'd been on a hen party. So it's almost like she wanted to see families obliterated. So that's quite psychopathic. She also sent a sympathy card to a family and kept a record of that on her phone. She also looked up some of these families on social media to see the grieving process. She did want to witness sadistically what she had caused, the pain that she had caused.
In her crimes, there's no aggression as such. Now, of course, it's the taking of an innocent's life, but in technical terms, what does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that she was power driven because she had the power, a bit like Dr. Shipman, who had a God complex. He had the power to decide who lived and died. And he said his motivation was he was doing people a favour because they were so old and it was his decision. So in Lucy's case, it's not the same. It's not a God complex, but it was about power. And it was about that she had, like, the way she killed the young people, was the babies, was torturous. So she watched them. And it's possible that she's killed a lot more, that they're investigating 4,000 other cases now. So, it really was about power. And some of her behaviours are almost like the way a paedophile would groom. So she would have groomed families. She would have become part of them. And then sadistically, she would have enjoyed the result of her actions, like giving too much insulin, air in the IV and that kind of thing. So it really was about, I suppose, there was another theory, actually, and I don't know how much it's been investigated, that it's possible that she was trying to get the attention of a doctor that she had a crush on so that she would create situations that the doctor would come down. Now, we did have a case a good few years ago, I think in the 90s, Richard Angelo, I think it was in New York, who used to create situations where there would be a crisis and he would have to deal with the crisis, and that was to impress his colleagues.
That pops up quite a bit in the fire service across the world as well, doesn't it, whereby it can happen that arsonists are also firefighters.
Yeah, it does. It happens a lot more than people realise, particularly in voluntary countries where they have volunteer fire forces. And there was another one, actually, I think it was the Angel of Death. Mm. I think her surname was Alec Beverly, I think. And she had Munchausen's by proxy, whereby somebody is around medical disasters, kind of not their own family, but they put it onto other people. And she was quite a prolific killer as well. And then there was a film made, Netflix, The Good Nurse, that was about 40 murders. That was Charles Cullen. So we do see this a bit in the medical, but it's not a widespread problem. But we can't say for sure how often it happens, because there was some other cases. There was one in Canada. A lady, I can't remember her name, it'll come back to me, but she wasn't picked up for years because she was very clever the way she did it. She only killed a certain amount, so it meant the excess deaths didn't get flagged. So it can happen, when people have that power. And the reason why it can happen for some is because they can be overworked and stressed, but also for others, like I said before, it could be a God complex, or trying to impress, or trying to advance their career.
Yeah,
or
almost. It also seems she wanted almost to take away from others what she didn't think she could have herself. It's hard, but it's important to understand people like her and her motivation. I mean, this is not just wild speculation. It's very important that we improve our understanding of why people do things like this, What are the red flags? What needs to be put in place to see it doesn't happen again into the future? It does require that level of analysis.
It does. And I think that's important, because when you look at how this case was handled, there's been a lot of things went wrong with the way this case is being handled. Like, some doctors were made to go to mediation with Lucy when they flagged that they had concerns. They were made to apologise to Lucy. Other people, she was actually the face of a campaign at one stage. So there was a lot missed. People just immediately on face value looked at this woman and said, there's absolutely no way this woman could be evil, when actually what we know now is how evil she was. And she wouldn't even come to court and face the families. Her family didn't come to the court that day, although they had come all the other days. So there's a lot of learnings that need to be really looked at and analysed, as you say, because of this case.
Is she likely to ever take responsibility? What would history tell us? I mean, maybe on the off chance she thought she could try and maintain her innocence if she got away with it. But now that she has been convicted, and this is going to get worse for her, I'd imagine. Do people like her accept responsibility for their actions at any point, generally speaking?
Well, psychopaths, generally speaking, don't. But Lucy's, I suppose, tricky, because in one way she has shown remorse through some of her writings. She's written stuff like, I'm a horrible, evil person, I'm evil, I did this. So there's high shame there and high denial as well at the same time, which is kind of a confusing personality trait. So we don't really know what Lucy's going to do. Lucy could revel in her notoriety in prison. It's hard to tell with somebody like her, because she's so unusual. She has some psychopathic behaviours, but then she also has, because a true psychopath would have no remorse. But Lucy doesn't have remorse in that she made the families go through a trial and she wouldn't face them. But in her writings, she seems to have some remorse. So there is. And now she hasn't been diagnosed with schizophrenia either, or any kind of psychotic break. So it's hard to tell with somebody like her, because I think she did these things consciously. I really don't think clinically she's a psychopath. So if she's consciously doing these things, well, then she can consciously change her mind about how she responds to the question as to whether she's guilty or not. So
yeah, and in WhatsApp chats after her actions, you know, she was almost a victim. How do we cope with this? This is the tough part of the job. And you know, really, really bizarre. Yeah. And finally, she will never see the light of day, it seems, with the whole life sentences, though you never know what might happen to in the future, Trina. She can never be allowed out again, because if she's capable of that, it's not like the type, but she could be capable of doing something like that again, is what I'm trying to say here.
Absolutely. Somebody with this kind of behaviour cannot be rehabilitated. There's no rehabilitation. She would be a danger to society. She should never, I agree, she should never see the light of day. But I do feel that something needs to change around the court process, that she should be made listen to the victim impacted statements. Like in America, for example, if somebody refused to go to court, we do have video to their cell so we can see. We don't want, it's punishment and retribution is not about, you know, throwing tomatoes and cabbages at people anymore and putting them in the stocks. But I think for the victims in this case, they need to know that she's heard. So really, in her cell, their victim impact statement should be played to Lucy. Now, there's nothing to say that she won't put her fingers in her ears and refuse to listen and all that kind of stuff. But I do think that something more needs to be done so that they can feel that she's heard their pain and their anguish.
Yes, so she shouldn't be allowed to continue to hurt them.
Yes, exactly.
Really is what it feels like. Okay. As I say, I think this is just going to be one that will, more details will emerge as we move forward. And then there's the whole situation whereby people had concerns, people were blowing whistles, and it's strange, because you do hear that here locally about different types of issues. Not locally, I mean in Ireland, whereby people try and blow the whistle, but they're shut down effectively. Okay, thanks so much for your time, Trina. I do appreciate it. Trina O'Connor, criminologist and host of Real Life's Untold podcast. And it is just that type of story that you don't want to talk about, but one which can't be ignored either. That's the story of the awful person, Lucy Letby, responsible for the deaths of those children. And injuries in some cases to others, and a very broad review now of any people or babies that she had contact with in the past to see if she had done it to anyone else. Now, we were chatting to Aaron yesterday about his experience of returning to Donegal. He's originally from Inishowen, but travelled back with his daughter from their home in Dublin. They do so to visit family in Inishowen and travel around Donegal. But there is nowhere suitable to change their daughter, who is 17, if my memory serves me correctly, to the point whereby they either have to stay local to where there are facilities, i.e. at home, or they travel with a van with a mattress in the back, and that is how they see to their daughter, which is completely unacceptable, isn't it? There's one proper, as it's described, toilet that's down in Narn, isn't it? It was recently provided off the back of fundraising and campaigning by locals, and there are calls for more proper changing facilities, which includes a hoist, a bed, if I could describe it as that, that can accommodate an adult, those types of things. Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh joins us on the programme now. Jimmy, good morning to you. Thanks for taking the call.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Right. In terms of, suppose, providing proper facilities, you know, in the county's sort of biggest population centre, Letterkenny, are plans afoot?
Plans are afoot, Greg. And first of all, can I say, I totally understand your caller yesterday. And, I've had these reports before from families having to change, people on toilet floors and all this sort of thing, you know. So, and somebody not being able to go to something because there's no suitable toilet available. So I fully understand what he's saying, and he's absolutely correct. In Letterkenny, we have got some funding from a disability awareness and participation fund, and that is going towards a change in places facility in the town, and we've got a site for it at the retail park in Letterkenny, and at the minute it's just out to tender. We also got a bit of additional funding from Minor Tourism to support it, so that should be in place reasonably soon. And also in town, Greg, as I understand it, the job that's going on up at the vestry in St Connell's at the park will also be providing the change in places facility. So that'll be two very well located ones in town. But it has to be said, Greg, that the caller is 100% right, and we are badly lagging in this, because I was just looking last night and I can't say that I'm 100% factually correct in this, but from what I could find over 60 of these facilities in Northern Ireland. Mm. For the entire Republic, I could only find about 30. So, you know, that gives you an idea of how far back we are with this.
Now, would you hope that we have quite a number of new state-of-the-art facilities, council facilities, Donegal Town, Dunloe, Letterkenny, yeah, wherever else I might be missing them out, if they were to be built from January onwards, they would have to provide proper changing space facilities. Are you hopeful that the council steps up to the mark now and is proactive and provides these facilities, at least in its own modern new facilities?
Oh, absolutely, Greg. But, I think that, you know, the government have to step up to the plate here, because all of this has to be funded. And, you know, as I explained to you earlier, we got some money from an awareness and participation fund. We got a little bit from Minor Tourism. I think the government need to have a dedicated fund here for this. I think we've reached that stage, because we are so far behind. It's not just about Donegal, it's all over the country. So it's something that I actually spoke to Senator Martin Conway last night. I was speaking to him about something else, and I mentioned this, that and he said he will raise it for me at Senate level and take it to government.
Good stuff. Judging by your stats, you know, 30 covering 26 counties, like, at best, that's one or none in every county of Ireland, really. Do you know what I mean? There might be one, that's two, but it's one or none.
Absolutely. There's big swaths of the country where there's none. And if you consider what that means that you're ruling out families being able to not just, you know, the person that needs the mm-hmm. toilet. You're ruling out families being able to visit those places at all.
Yeah.
You know, so when you consider how important tourism is to the likes of Donegal and, you know, our own, for our own people, for our own memories of our own community who need that facility, it limits them so much. Could I just say, Greg, as well, that this was first brought to me by the late Catherine Chan, looking about a change in places facility for Letterkenny, and that prompted me to put in that motion to apply to that fund for money, which Trudy O'Reilly did for me and was successful, you know, but it's just so, so important. And I just wanted to mention Catherine because she was driving this really hard and looking for it, you know, very much so.
Okay, and you did so. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Hopefully things progress as soon as is possible. And it would be fantastic to see three effectively in Donegal, two in Letterkenny, one in the west of the county. But we need to really crack on and have them available. At least five or six seems like we would need across a county of our size. All right, Councillor, thank you very much indeed. Councillor Jimmy Kavanagh there. And I note also other councillors commenting on this issue as well. So hopefully now, and the council works cross-party and well, on issues like this, and I hope we see some real firm progress, not just in Letterkenny, which would be very welcome, but right across the county in the coming months. I'd like, you know, feel like it probably needs, say, years, but regarding that terrible case with the nurse, many of her colleagues had their suspicions about her and told their superiors, but my first thought was how come none of them contacted the police? A confidential call to the police would surely have got them involved a lot earlier than they were. It's a big call to make. I understand exactly where you're coming from. I've spoken to whistleblowers in the health service in this country in the past, and everything can be on the line if you're making one of those calls. You have to be 100% certain, and you can have your suspicions and you can have your beliefs, but to make that accusation, you'd have to feel really, really certain, and you'd have to be prepared to put your entire career and your ability to pay your mortgage and support your family on the line as well. And I think when you think about it, you can see why people perhaps don't or are reluctant to do so, because it does get a little bit, it's very high stakes. And as I say, you might say it to a friend and they'd say, well, do you have evidence of it? Well, I think it's happening. Well, so, but I take your point, but I'm trying to also look at it from maybe the other view as well. Jim McGuinness destroyed Gaelic football with blanket defences and hand passing, believes the listener. Okay. Let me see. Good morning. Fantastic news that Jim is back. It's a massive lift for the GEA community. Let's really get behind the team now, but also let's not expect miracles straight away. Hashtag Jimmy's winning matches. Might as well give this a plug whilst we're talking about it. Jimmy's winning matches again. You want to know the secret about football? You have to get back up again every time you hit. As Donegal braces itself for another bout of Jimmy McGuinness fever on Green on Theatre, a delighted stage Letterkenny writer Kieran Kelly's highly acclaimed play Jimmy's winning matches once again this coming week. Haven't seen myself, but great reports from those that have. Jimmy's winning matches is to go ahead this week from Thursday the 24th to Saturday the 26th of August at 8 p.m. in On Green On Theatre. Tickets for Jimmy's winning matches are available now from ongreenon.com and by ringing the box office in 07491 2777. Apparently the NCT is going cashless, so we're going to be talking about that. If you've got a view on that, I'm looking for official confirmation from NCT. Now, I'm not saying it's not happening, but it was posted on an NCT Ireland Facebook page. That's the only place I really saw it. Now, it's not verified and it only has about 5,000 followers. So, but I presume it everyone's been commenting on it, so I presume it must be true. It just was a bit of a red flag to me. I didn't realise this. And the way it was phrased as well seemed a wee bit strange, and when it was posted on that NCT Ireland Facebook page. But anyway, it must be true, because I know lots and lots of people are commenting on it, but I just had my suspicions that that's not an official Facebook page, but I'm obviously wrong. As it relates to the nurse in Britain, a caller says the electric chair she should get, wasting taxpayers' money keeping her in jail. Sometimes a life in jail is a greater punishment than the loss of your life, is it? This child killer should no longer be called a nurse. She should be stripped of her qualifications. Another caller says, Monday night sessions was... just not yet, no. Monday night sessions was great crack last night with Paul and Jimmy in Blake's. Good talent on the show, and of course it's hard to beat the Townies. I hope it continues twice a year in Blake's, becoming a great venue for all kinds of music. I was watching it myself because it was streamed, as I mentioned earlier. Quite a few pints of Guinness 00 flying about the place. I presume there was 00. But anyway, they all seemed to have a bit of crack. I worked as a waitress in Boston 20 years ago. My hourly wage was $2.53 per hour, which was minimum wage for waiting staff back then. We relied on tips to make up our wages. The minimum wage here is really good, so I don't believe you have to tip. I would always tip for good service, but I don't believe it should be expected. What do you think about that? 08660 25,000. Is it really good? Right. A caller says, my name's Alana, and I was chatting to you on Highland Radio in July about the parking situation up at the ED at Letterkenny University Hospital. We're here 2 months later and nothing has been done. I've emailed Peter Byrne. He's over all the parking in Letterkenny Hospital. He has not replied to my emails. Sometimes, or something needs to be done for the safety of everyone, and especially for people who need to use disabled parking, as people who do not have a badge are parking in the disabled parking as the paint has worn off. It's terrible the way he's leaving it without caring about anyone's safety. Thank you for that. Right, OK, as I say, there's a post on a Facebook page, NCT Ireland. As I say, it's not verified. It only has 5,000 followers. But anyway, and it was also posted late in the evening. It says, we're saying goodbye to cash. NCTS are going cashless over the coming months for your safety and convenience. This means that payments must be made in advance of attending for your NCT. When introduced, payments can be made online or by postal order. Hashtag cashless, hashtag NCTS. Deputy Thomas Pringle, we've invited him on to talk about this. Are we satisfied this is real? Because as I say, it's crazy phrasing, if it is, Thomas. But have you been able to get confirmation that NCT Ireland is going down this route?
I haven't been able to get confirmation yet, Greg. I've just heard about this when you contacted me this morning there. I've been trying to find out what's happened since there. Now, I know that the NCT website says it has a fraudulent alert on it just, but I'm not sure exactly what that is in relation to. It is symptomatic, I think, of a worrying trend that's taking place with a lot of agencies in Ireland that they're only accepting card payments and stuff like that there, or payment over the internet, and they're refusing to accept cash. And I think actually the legality of that is very dubious at the moment in Ireland, because as far as I'm aware, anyway, cash is legal tender, so therefore it has to be acceptable by everybody. And it does cause, I think, a large degree of worry as well for people, particularly the older elements of our society as well, who depend a lot on cash payments and would actually be using the NCT services and other public services quite often as well, and would have to rely on paying for cash with further services. And I don't think that should be removed at all.
Is it time that there was an intervention here? Because, you know, we huff and puff, but these companies obviously believe they can get away with it. We've seen it with the Ploughing Championship, the Three Arena. There's other events that have passed or are upcoming. And if the NCT are actually going down this route, you know, there's no point us having these conversations and hundreds of thousands of people giving out on social media and on the internet and nothing being done about it. What do you think? Is there a role for government here to step in and say, hold on, you are obliged to accept what is legal tender?
I think there has to be a role, because it's the government that lays out that it is legal tender. Now, they have separated the central bank from government over the last number of years because of EU regulations and stuff like that there. But I still think that the Department of Finance has a role to play in relation to this. And it's something that I've brought up before with them, but without any response at all. And because it's something that does come up, not hugely often either in my day-to-day work with constituents, but it does come up and it is an issue, and I think it's something that has to be clarified and has to be dealt with. And indeed, from my own personal point of view, I would prefer to pay with cash for a lot of services, and that's it, because I don't think that the bank needs to know what services I'm availing of and where I'm buying a cup of coffee or anything like that there as well. Like, you know, so for that reason, I think we should be maintaining the cash service. And it's purely, I would imagine, it's purely money saving effort on behalf of the different or different companies and stuff
That's what gives me the suspicion about this NCT post. As I say, I know we've invited you to discuss this, but it's worthy of having the broader conversation. But I noticed it's being discussed elsewhere as well. We're saying goodbye to cash and then hashtag cashless. It sounds like gaslighting. That's why I'd be astonished if NCT Ireland really did put this out. And if they did, they need to sack their PR team. And then you hear...
I wouldn't be surprised at them going cashless, but maybe using that word or something.
Yeah,
they're
not reading the room very well. But then we hear other situations, and it seems to primarily affect older people in terms of booking tickets for buses. And now there's priority boarding for buses, like it's Ryanair or something. I mean, I would have thought Bus Air is a vital functioning service that really no one should get preferential treatment. That's the way I feel anyway, but I might be an outlier in relation to that. But we really need to check ourselves, Thomas, don't we? Because a lot of this would be very difficult to undo. And so there's going to be a big pushback eventually.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, you know, and people like there's pushes Bus Air, and they're trying to say now that the Bus Air services are separate to the local bus services, and therefore they have to do a different system and that there. You know, and people have earned the right to have the free travel pass and stuff like that there, and they use it, and they should be facilitated in every way in using it as well. And you know, and people who pay with cash and have that's their only means to do it, that is nothing wrong with that. It's perfectly legal. So these companies have to facilitate it and have to. Now, look, we all know with progress, maybe in 20 or 30 years' time, everybody will have moved on and moved beyond cash.
Yes.
And maybe that'll happen naturally. But if that happens, so be it. But the company still should be facilitating that up to us now, because I know there's quite a lot of people around Donegal that depend on cash payments, and a lot of people that, even though they could, will decide that they shouldn't have to use the internet and shouldn't have to use computers to apply for services that they're entitled to as a right as well. And those people shouldn't be excluded, I believe.
Yeah, I think most people agree. That's why it's kind of strange the way. And I think you're perfectly right. You know, there's a lot of people listening that don't use cash anymore. I don't use cash a great deal, to be honest. I don't mind the tapping. I probably even get that microchip in my wrist that they have in some of the Nordic countries. To be absolutely honest, because I like all that technology and stuff, right? But I recognise the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't. And it will naturally change. So why force it now? You know, why disenfranchise, you know, really important people, your customers? If it happens, it'll happen. But, you know, why push us down this route when so many people don't want it? Anyway, thank you very much for your time, Thomas, as always. I appreciate you accepting our invite to comment on that. As I say, I'm not saying it's not true, but I'll tell you, if that's the way the NCT are announcing it, my guests would be flabbergasted. All right, a couple of comments here. 5 weeks ago, I had a really bad fall and couldn't walk. I had to get morphine in the ambulance and was in a wheelchair as there were no beds. I asked repeatedly for help and even had to ask a cleaner to take me to the toilet. The doctor told me they get rid of those with less serious ailments, as it will be quicker to deal with those with more important issues thereafter to help clear with the waiting room. Greg, what can the government do re our health service staff shortages? Well, tie it in with what the young people said in your show on Friday. Why doesn't the government make it more attractive to our well-educated, trained, skilled young nurses, doctors, personnel, if various professions to stay and work in and for our own hospitals and people's needs, at least for a few years, to acknowledge our taxpayers' contribution? Yeah, I get where you're coming from. And I don't really get the motivation, and it's not exclusive to here. I don't really get the motivation for not paying people the money and treating people the way they need to be treated to stay. Any word back from NCT, Caroline, officially? No, nothing back yet. Okay. A caller says, if NCT goes cashless and I refuse to pay by any other means, they will not perform the test. Would that be a legal excuse for not having NCT, considering that the government are going to make cash payments always available? Another, cash is king. Don't go to get your car NCT. Time the people spoke up to stop this. Okay, a lot of people are opposed to that. I am one of those who cannot read or write, so my family do all my stuff online. Taking cash away is leaving me more isolated. It's so unfair. Yeah, indeed, and that's a reality for a lot of people as well. Great planning in Letterkenny took the heart out of her. With the retail park, one of the main things were to put toilets down there in the first place. Beggars belief, says a caller there. Now, I just want to give a mention to our mega cash draw. It's our summer cash draw as we edge towards the end of summer, dare I even say it, though I'm really confident we're going to have just the most amazing September. There's nothing to suggest that other than my hope and dreams. Just once we get the kids out of the way, then we can go out and enjoy it, can't we? But anyway, you would potentially enjoy it with 2,500, 2,500, or even 10,000 in your back pocket, because we are giving you the opportunity to win 2,500 this Friday, 2,500 the following Friday, and 10,000 on that following Friday as well, if my maths are correct. Yes, indeed, they are. All you have to do to enter is go onto our website. You'll see a big banner there, the summer draw, summer cash draw. Click in and buy your tickets. It's perfectly safe for you to do so, because it's all very secure. It's a tenner a ticket, so you can have a punt if you can afford it and it's within your means. And if you want to buy more tickets as gifts, you get an extra ticket for 50, an extra two tickets for 80. So that's completely up to you, okay? Now, if you don't want to use the card online after our last conversation, cash is also king here at Highland Radio. You can call up to us at the Mountaintop Letterkenny and we'll sort it all out for you as well during office hours. But if you want to give us a call, we can also process your entry that way as well. And we've got the Trombola sitting here. It's we're constantly looking at it here in the station. And your name could be in it. And you could win either 2,500 on Friday, 2,500 the following Friday, or 10 grand on that following Friday as well. But just to let you know that if you buy your ticket now, you're in all three draws. Okay, so plenty of incentive for you to enter. You have three chances to win. It gets very busy on the Friday, so if you think you possibly are going to buy a ticket, you might give us a buzz now, 07491 25,000, if that's how you intend to pay, because, as I say, on a Friday then it can be hard to accommodate everyone. A caller says, why do we give free legal aid to everybody that comes into this country that breaks the law? They should all be deported. There's lots of people think we shouldn't be given free legal aid out in lots of different cases, but it is the way it is. All right, if you've got a view on anything we've talked about in the first hour of the show, please get involved in the conversation by WhatsApp or texting 086 6025,000, 086 6025,000. You can call us as well on 07491 25,000. And just to remind you, if you're listening to the podcast or if you're listening to the replay of the show at night, you can always text in as well, by the way, so you can close it down and text in and have your views aired the next day. Your emails come in to us at comments@highlandradio.com. and just a final reminder before we break for the news at 10, that you can watch this show every day. It's broadcast on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, across all of your devices, on Facebook, on Highland Radio News and Sport, or Highland Hub. And also, you can watch in browser on our website. There's a little Watch Live tab. You can click that. All right, we'll be back with much more in the 9 till noon show after the news at 10. And we'll be kicking off with Community Garda information, where we have the latest appeals and information for you first here on Highland Radio from An Garda Síochána Donegal. That's all on the way.